All right, so we're diving into a fascinating period of history today, one that really highlights the unexpected connections that pop up, you know, when you dig deep enough.
Yeah, it's amazing how a seemingly minor event or figure can end up playing a pivotal role in a much larger story, and this one really showcases that.
Absolutely, and today we're focusing on, well, actually, I'll let you introduce our main players since you've dug deep into the source material.
Of course. So we've got, on the one hand, Oliver Cromwell, arguably the most powerful man in England during the 17th century, and on the other, the Waldensians, a small and often persecuted religious group tucked away in the valleys of the Alps. Now, what could possibly connect these two, you might ask?
Yeah, that was my first thought, too. It sounds like a pretty unlikely pairing.
But that's where it gets interesting, because it was precisely during this period, the mid-1600s, that their paths intersected, and in a way that was absolutely crucial for the survival of the Waldensians.
Okay, so already I'm intrigued, and for this deep dive, you've provided us with a lecture by Dr. Kevin E. Frederick that zeroes in on Cromwell's involvement with this group. And what we're going to try and do today is really unpack this episode in history. I mean, what motivated Cromwell's actions? What were the Waldensians up against? And what was the ultimate impact of his involvement?
Right. We're aiming to give our listeners a clear understanding of this often overlooked chapter in European history, and it's a pretty fascinating one.
Totally. So let's start with Cromwell himself. Who was he, and why was he such a dominant figure at this point in time?
Well, in the mid-17th century, you can't really talk about England without talking about Oliver Cromwell. He was the driving force behind the parliamentarian victory in the English Civil War, a brilliant military leader who ultimately rose to become Lord Protector of England in 1653.
Right. So he basically reshaped the entire political landscape of England. But from what I've read, he wasn't exactly a simple figure. I mean, this is a guy capable of both incredible ruthlessness and surprising compassion.
Absolutely. He was a man of deep contradictions, capable of waging brutal campaigns like we saw in Ireland, but also advocating for a degree of religious tolerance towards certain Protestant groups, a real paradox.
And understanding these seeming contradictions is key to understanding his actions later on.
Yeah.
Right? But before we get to the Waldensians, we need to set the scene a bit. What was going on in England that shaped Cromwell's worldview?
Okay, so imagine Europe. In the throes of the Counter-Reformation, the Catholic Church is trying to claw back its influence, and England is caught right in the middle of this struggle.
Right, and this tension played out in a very real way between King Charles VIII, who leaned towards Catholicism, and the largely Protestant Parliament.
Exactly, and this clash of ideologies eventually exploded into the English Civil War in 1642, and that's where Cromwell really steps onto the stage.
And he was leading a very specific type of Protestant army, right, the infamous Roundheads.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Roundheads. These were men driven by a fiery Puritan faith, an especially strict form of Protestantism. They were disciplined, well-organized, and utterly convinced of their righteousness. They might have been mocked by the more flamboyant Cavaliers, the Royalist forces, but on the battlefield, they were forced to be reckoned with.
And one of their most decisive victories came at the Battle of Naseby in 1645, right? Where they didn't just defeat Charles, but also captured his personal correspondence.
Oh, that was a game changer. Those letters revealed that the king was basically playing both sides, making deals with Catholic powers against his own Protestant subjects. Talk about betrayal.
Yeah, this discovery really ignited the already simmering tensions and fueled Cromwell's determination to bring Charles to justice. It ultimately led to the king's trial and execution in 1649, a truly unprecedented event in English history.
You're right. I mean, to execute a reigning monarch, that was a radical act, and Cromwell was at the heart of it. This ultimately led to the establishment of the Commonwealth, and although offered the crown himself, Cromwell refused opting for the title of Lord Protector in 1653.
So we've got Cromwell, this incredibly powerful figure, now firmly in control of England. Let's shift gears now and talk about the Waldensians. Who were they, and what was their situation like in the lead-up to Cromwell's involvement?
All right, so the Waldensians, they were a religious group with roots going back centuries, mainly concentrated in the Caution Alps in what's now part of Italy. They faced persecution for their beliefs for generations, but in the decades leading up to Cromwell, their situation became even more dire.
Yeah, the lecture highlighted the impact of the Black Plague in the 1630s. I mean, it devastated their leadership.
Yeah, 14 out of their 16 pastors died. It was a huge blow. And to fill the void, the Swiss Reformed Church in Geneva sent in French-speaking Huguenot pastors. These were French Protestants who'd also faced their own share of persecution.
So it's sort of solidarity among persecuted groups.
Exactly. But while these new pastors helped to revitalize the Waldensian church, their presence also raised suspicions with their Catholic ruler, the Duke of Savoy, who started seeing them as a potential political threat.
So things were already pretty tense, and then the Duke decided to tighten the screws even further.
He did. He started chipping away at the freedoms the Waldensians had been granted in the Treaty of Cavour back in 1561, culminating in a decree that forced over 1,000 Waldensian families to relocate into a restricted area, essentially a Waldensian ghetto.
A blatant attempt to isolate and control them. But if I remember correctly, the Duke's ambitions went even further than just containment.
Absolutely. He had much more sinister plans in mind under the guidance of the Marquis de Pinay's. He deployed 4,000 troops into the Waldensian valleys with a secret objective to completely eradicate them and replace them with loyal Catholics.
And the way they went about this was chillingly deceptive, right?
Yeah, talk about a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Ugh.
Pinay's soldiers were quartered in Waldensian homes under the pretense of peaceful negotiations, but it was all a ruse, a calculated act of betrayal. And on Easter morning, April 12th, 1655, at 4 a.m, the order was given to unleash a full-scale massacre.
It's difficult to even imagine the horrors that unfolded that day. The lecture doesn't shy away from the brutal details of what happened in the Lucerna Valley and then in the weeks that followed in the surrounding valleys.
The accounts are truly harrowing. They spared no one. Men, women, children all slaughtered in their homes. Homes were set ablaze. People were hanged, dismembered, slashed. Salt and pepper were poured into their wounds. They were thrown down mountains, impaled. It was a scene of unimaginable cruelty.
Even infants were not spared. It's truly horrifying to even contemplate.
It defies comprehension. The brutality was staggering. And these accounts eventually made their way back to England, reaching Cromwell and his secretary, John Milton.
And their reaction was anything but passive.
Oh, absolutely. It was swift and decisive. Cromwell immediately ordered a full report on the massacre. And it's important to remember here that Milton already had a deep fascination with the Waldensians. He saw them as a direct link to the early Christian church, a pure form of Christianity untainted by later Catholic doctrines.
So he had a certain idealized view of them.
Yes. And upon reading those firsthand accounts of the atrocities, his outrage was palpable. And acting on Cromwell's behalf, he drafted letters to Protestant leaders across Europe in Sweden, Denmark, Holland, Switzerland, Transylvania, calling for united action and diplomatic pressure against the House of Savoy.
A sort of pan-Protestant call to arms.
Exactly. And Milton didn't just stop at official correspondence. He also used his considerable literary skills to raise awareness and condemn the massacre.
Right. His famous sonnet on the Piedmont massacre, "Avenge, O Lord, thy slaughtered saints," a powerful piece of writing that captured the outrage felt across Protestant Europe.
Absolutely. And the impact of this unified Protestant response, orchestrated by Cromwell and fueled by Milton's words, was undeniable. The House of Savoy was caught off guard by the sheer force of the condemnation.
Cromwell even dispatched a special envoy, Sir Samuel Morland, to the Duke, giving him full diplomatic status. And the detailed report on the massacre, titled "The Collection of Papers Sent to His Highness," was widely circulated, further solidifying the condemnation.
This really highlights Cromwell's political acumen. He managed to forge a level of unity among Protestant powers that was pretty rare at the time. They recognized a shared threat and a moral imperative to act.
And Cromwell didn't stop at diplomatic pressure. He also declared a national day of fasting and prayer in England and organized collections to aid the Waldensian refugees.
He did, and Milton himself drafted a powerful Latin speech that Morland delivered at the Doodle Court. It included lines like, "Oh, the fired houses which are yet smoking the torn limbs, the ground defiled with blood. Angels shudder with horror. Men are astounded. Heaven itself seems astonished at the cries of dying men and the very earth to blush."
It's a vivid and emotional appeal meant to really drive home the scale of the atrocities.
Exactly. But the Duke of Savoy didn't exactly crumble under this pressure, at least not immediately. His mother, Madame Royale, responded to Morland with skepticism and tried to downplay the events and delay negotiations.
A classic stalling tactic, it seems. Cromwell was apparently so frustrated by this that he even considered urging the Swiss to launch a military attack against Savoy.
He did, but the Swiss ultimately hesitated due to their own complicated political situation.
So back to diplomacy it went. And finally, in late August 1655, the House of Savoy proposed a truce. But it was deemed insufficient by Cromwell and the other Protestant diplomats.
Yeah, they felt they'd been outmaneuvered and outdelayed. But then in a move that I found particularly interesting, Cromwell offered to resettle the Waldensian refugees in Ireland on land that had been confiscated from Irish Catholics.
Now, that's an interesting twist. It seems to expose a certain inconsistency in his actions, right? I mean, championing religious freedom for one group while simultaneously displacing another.
It definitely raises questions about the complexities of his motivations. I mean, on the one hand, his deep Puritan faith clearly fueled his outrage at the persecution of fellow Protestants, but offering them land in Ireland also served England's strategic interests. It was likely a combination of conviction and pragmatism at play.
Real politic in action, and what's fascinating is that the Waldensians, deeply attached to their ancestral lands, declined Cromwell's offer.
Yeah, their refusal speaks volumes about their resilience and their connection to their homeland. But it's crucial to remember that Cromwell and Milton genuinely believed in the Waldensians' unique status as a true church. They saw defending them as defending the very essence of Christianity itself.
Which helps explain the passion and vigor of their response. The level of diplomatic unity they achieved was really remarkable.
It was, and yet we can't ignore the contradictions in Cromwell's character. His brutal actions in Ireland stand in stark contrast to his defense of the Waldensians.
This really underscores the complexities of the era. The Counter-Reformation was a brutal period with both Catholics and Protestants engaging in widespread violence. Judging Cromwell's actions through a modern lens is difficult. But as the lecture emphasizes, we need to consider them within the context of his time, a time when religious conflict was the norm.
And ultimately, Cromwell did act as a powerful protector for the Waldensians at a time when their very existence was threatened. It's safe to say that without his and Milton's intervention, their future would have been far more uncertain.
And it's worth noting that beyond this specific historical episode, Cromwell, despite his authoritarian tendencies, did advocate for certain democratic principles for the common person in England.
He did, and it's fascinating to consider his attempts to enforce a strict moral code on English society, banning things like Sunday sports, restricting alcohol sales, even outlawing Christmas celebrations. Talk about a killjoy.
It's almost hard to imagine, right, Christmas canceled. But as the lecture points out, the ballad, "The World Turned Upside Down," really captures the popular resistance to this austerity.
It does. It gives us a glimpse into the social and religious climate of the time.
So to sum up this deep dive, we've explored the surprising connection between Oliver Cromwell, this powerful English leader, and the persecuted Waldensians, a connection fueled by strong religious convictions and the influential voice of John Milton.
It's a compelling example of international solidarity driven by faith in the face of unimaginable brutality, a reminder that even seemingly minor figures can have a huge impact on the course of history.
And it gives us a lot to think about when considering the complex interplay of power, religious belief, and the defense of vulnerable communities throughout history.
Absolutely. And this deep dive leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder. Given the inherent contradictions we've seen in a leader like Cromwell, how do those complexities ultimately shape our understanding of their place in history? How do we weigh their actions, both the good and the bad? And what does this tell us about the nature of moral action, especially in times of conflict? Think about the lasting consequences of interventions like Cromwell's and the enduring resilience of those who face persecution, a quality so clearly embodied by the Waldensians.
Some heavy stuff to contemplate. But isn't that the mark of a truly great deep dive?
It is indeed food for thought for all of us.
Until next time.